I'm Dine Roberts. This is a special Oregon Treasures edition of Stage and Studio with funding from the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Oregon Treasures features veteran artists and arts organizations that make an impact on the state. Today, I talk with one of Portland's esteemed authors, Molly Gloss, who has focused her career writing about strong women of the American West. Molly Gloss was a finalist for the Pen Faulkner Award for American Fiction for The Jump Off Creek, about a woman who homesteads in Oregon in 1895. And she won the James Tiptree Jr. Award for her novel Wildlife, about an early 20th century feminist in Washington. Her newest work is The Hearts of Horses, the story of a young woman who breaks horses in eastern Oregon. So much of Gloss's work features women in the rural West, and a lot of it is from the late 1800s to the early 1900s. I asked about her fascination with that time period and about setting her novels in the Northwest.
Well, I think I'm writing about the time and place I would be living in were I living a different life. Does that make sense? I've grown up reading the literature of the American West, and that's where my heart is. And that landscape is the landscape of my heart. When I was a kid, my dad's from Texas, and when I was a kid, we drove back and forth to Texas every summer, and I'm sitting in the back seat of the car looking out the window at this Western landscape while I'm reading these cowboy novels in the back seat. So I think that it really imprinted on me. But what I've been doing in some way is writing the novels that I could not find in the library, the novels about the American West that involve the stories of the women, which were largely untold, and the novels about the heroism of ordinary lives, I think. Because I think that a lot of my novels are, at their heart, they're really still cowboy novels. I hope that I'm presenting a different sort of mythology about the cowboy, a mythology that maybe emphasizes community and the feminine side of things rather than the lone cowboy hero who rides off at the end after saving us all with his gunplay. Martha, at the beginning of The Hearts of Horses, rides into the valley the way cowboy heroes have ridden into the valley at the beginning of countless cowboy novels, including many Zane Grey novels. But, you know, she doesn't ride out at the end of that novel the way Shane did, for instance.
Did you find that this time period especially allowed women to be more than a wife or a mother or to break free of their own boundaries at that time?
Well, it's a challenge, certainly, for me as a writer. If I want to write a novel that has some adventure in it and I want to put a woman at the center, it's a challenge to deal then with the question of marriage and children. In Wildlife, Charlotte has five boys, but she leaves them behind and goes off on an adventure. And in Jump Off Creek, Lydia has no children. It's a difficult balancing act to figure out how to deal with those questions if you're wanting to put a woman at the center of an adventure. But it is true and has been little written about that women in the West in the late 19th century and early 20th century, women actually had a lot more power in a sense and were much more equal partners with their husbands, especially in the rural areas of the West. They had to be. They had to be helping their husbands with the ranch work and the farm work in a way that has been little remarked upon in fiction. So there's that. And then with The Hearts of Horses, Martha is a girl who's breaking horses, which is not something that we think of as girl work. And I initially thought that she would be a rare bird. And I set the novel in World War I, thinking that because the boys were all going to be gone to the war, that that would give her an opportunity to do boys' work. But when I began to do the research about that, I discovered that there were, in fact, lots of girls who were breaking horses in and out of the war. It was just a chore that often got left to the girls and women. On a ranch, on a family ranch, for instance, it was the daughter who was often designated the horsebreaker, the father and the sons would be off dealing with the cattle, and they would say to the daughter, "Hey, you get these horses ready for us." So it was not unusual for the girls to have these kinds of jobs.
In addition to the strong women in Gloss's novels, her writing is also laden with rich historical details.
I was a history major in college, and the research is great fun for me. I really love the research, and I'm sort of an obsessive researcher. I probably know 100 times more things than actually appear on the page. My feeling about that is every time I have to choose a detail to use out of those 100 things, the detail I choose, I think, will be interesting enough and perhaps unique enough that it will, I hope anyway, give readers the sense that, oh, this is somebody who knows the other 99 things. In The Jump Off Creek, I actually started that book without doing any research at all. I thought that I knew what I wanted to do, that I was writing a novel about a homesteader. It's just that instead of it being the man being the homesteader, it was, and instead of the woman being the sister or the daughter of the homesteader, she was going to be the homesteader, and that I could easily write a Western novel around that. But when I began to do that, to write that, I discovered I really didn't know very much about what kind of woman, 19th century woman, would choose a solitary homesteading life. Because I realized after 20 or 25 years of reading all across the spectrum of Western literature that I had never encountered single women homesteaders and didn't really know much about the woman's role in the West. So I stopped what I was doing. I stopped writing, and I spent a whole summer just reading the private writings of women in the West, the diaries and letters and journals of women in the West. There are not very many written by homesteading women because, you know, these women were pretty darn busy. And so to come in after a long day and actually write about it was something that didn't happen very often. But I did find lots of things by independent women in the West, and I found lots of memoirs by women who were writing about their girlhood, writing alongside their dad, working outside with their dad, and discovered that there were, in fact, lots of single women homesteaders, that, in fact, 1 in 5 homestead claims was filed by a woman, and women had a better rate of proving up on their homesteads than men did. So when I went back to the book then at the end of the summer, I was able to begin to write Lydia's diary, which I had not had in the novel before then. But as soon as I wrote her first diary entry, it was as if she sat down next to me and started dictating this book to me, which was a great gift to me. So most of the research for Jump Off Creek was the reading of these women's private writings. I've done a lot more research of other kinds of things for the other novels, for Wildlife and for Hearts of Horses.
Is there a lot of that in your blood, in your ancestry of the women who, I don't know, were they pioneers? Were they homesteaders?
All 4 of my great-grandmothers were women in the West, certainly. I know a little bit about each of them, and each of them has an interesting story if I knew a little more. One of my 2 Texas grandmothers, one who had 12 children, the last 2 of whom were twins, and she named them Y and Z. I think that might have been a message to her husband. She was married to a well driller in Texas. And the other Texas grandmother was actually the first white child born in Arion County, Texas, which is an interesting thing to me. I'm a 4th generation Oregonian, and it occurred to me a while back that if I lived in Texas, I could say that I was a 4th generation Texan because of my dad's heritage and his grandmother having been born in Texas. My Oregon great-grandmothers, actually one is Washington State, not Oregon. She had married a man who was a Civil War veteran, and he was killed in a fall from a horse. And then she married another man who abandoned her after they had several children, and she wound up in Walla Walla taking in people's laundry to survive. They had been ranching in the Walla Walla Valley. And the other woman was a German immigrant who came across the West in a covered wagon, actually, as a child, and married a man who was a nurseryman in Vancouver, Fort Vancouver. And he's, the family story at least, is that he had planted all the trees that lined the officer's row in Vancouver and in the cemetery there.
And is that where you grew up, is in that area then?
No, I grew up in Gresham, in rural Gresham, when it was still very much countryside, strawberry fields and raspberries and pole beans, which is what I did every summer, picking those crops. Very much countryside back then. It's not anymore.
You didn't have horses?
No, we were poor. We were poor, and my friends and neighbors had horses, and I rode a lot when I was a kid, but But I never had a horse of my own.
Forgive me for that. I just think everybody assumes that you have a horse in your backyard. You know?
They do. They do assume that. And I get a lot of email, actually, from horse women who assume that I'm one of them. And it's a little bit embarrassing, actually, because, you know, they'll say to me something like, I've just come in from feeding out the horses and it's an ice storm and it's really awful out there. But, you know, you must know what that's like. And, well, no, no, I don't know exactly, because I don't have to be out feeding my horses in an ice storm.
Lydia Sanderson, the heroine of The Jump Off Creek, chooses to homestead by herself in the backwoods of Oregon in 1895. Molly Gloss writes about a certain freedom for women in the American West they couldn't find in the major cities. The descriptions of the homesteading life in The Jump Off Creek has a certain intensity and authenticity to it that is often painstaking and gut-wrenching. The book dramatizes just how difficult it must have been for homesteaders. I asked Gloss how she achieved the end emotion.
Lydia is a lot like some of these women that I read about, in that the life is certainly hard, and she doesn't deny that it's hard or that it's lonely. But what she gains is independence. And that was something that women in the East, and Lydia comes from Pennsylvania, so that women there had a hard time getting hold of any kind of independent life. They were often the possession, really, of their husbands or of their fathers. So women who came West, lots of them came West, I think, looking for that, looking for the feeling of making their own decisions. And, you know, you balance that against the hardships. And, you know, writing about her life, I'm living it a bit. I mean, it's a life, I think she's braver than I am, but it's a life that I would have wanted to choose for myself, maybe.
Molly Gloss seems to have a different style of writing in each of her books, especially in The Jump Off Creek.
The style in The Jump Off Creek I think of as pretty sparse in a way. These are people who aren't very verbal. This is not long after Lydia has first come to her homestead property that she's bought sight unseen. In fact, this is the first morning as she's waking up after the first night in her little cabin. Across the rim of the coffee cup, she looked at Angell's place. Another ridge rose up along the south, steep and high as the one behind the house. The jump-off creek ran between them, along the flattish bottomland where Angell had cut his cross ties. It was a narrow clearing, 100 yards wide at most, running up and down the banks of the creek, maybe 20 acres altogether, of weeds and grass and thin saplings and brush growing among the stumps. Where the brush pen was and in front of the house, nothing grew. It was all mud and rocks and deep tracks of men's boots, horses' shod feet. There were slick, muddy trails at the near edge of the creek, too, where they'd come for the water. Lydia stood and stared at all of it for quite a while. She had spent some of the night sleepless on the bare bunk, folded up in her mother's windmill quilt, fitting her bony hip and shoulder into a gap where two logs joined. And in the darkness, lying a long time awake, listening to the dripping roof and the rats chewing the garbage in the yard, she had begun finally, stubbornly, to tally the work. It was an old solace. Her mother hadn't ever liked to have her list them like that, all the things needing doing, ranked from worst to least, first to last. You'll make the heart go right out of you. But Lydia always had liked to see the whole shape of her work. When there was time for it and paper, she would write the jobs down and afterward mark a line through every one as it was finished. In the blackness last night, inside the cold, stinking house, she'd made that list against her closed eyes inside her head, going over it slowly and over it, getting the order right. Now, in the gray daylight, standing looking at the mud and the high, wet weeds, looking at the whole shape, all the things needing doing, she felt her heart tighten up like a fist.
You're listening to a special Oregon Treasures edition of Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts, featuring novelist Molly Gloss. You can hear all of the show online at stageandstudio.org or find the link and photos of Molly Gloss at the Stage and Studio Facebook page. Gloss, a history major in college, loves research. She not only studies the time period, but reads the fiction of the time.
I read quite a few novels written in the 1890s for Jump Off Creek and novels written in the 1910s for The Hearts of Horses. It's very useful, actually. It's useful both for the rhythm and syntax and vocabulary of the period, and also just for little details of how people lived their lives, the items in their homes, for instance, and things they might have done that you would not think about, like going out for an ice cream cone or something like that, which you don't ordinarily perhaps think of if you're writing a book about the 1890s in the rural West. But I read quite a few novels written by women, the kinds of novels, the romantic Western fiction that women wrote back then. In fact, lots of women were writing those novels from about the 1880s into the 1920s, really, until men sort of took over the field of the Western. Lots of women were writing them. It was okay for a genteel woman to take up a writing life because it was something she could do in the home, close to the nursery, close to the kitchen. And they were interested in writing those kinds of romance novels about cowboys, really. That's something that I read a lot of when I was working on the Jump Off Creek.
That must have been fun.
It was fun, and I actually collect them. So I have quite a few of them that I actually own, but they've gotten more and more expensive, which is the good news. They've been discovered, and these are women whose work had fallen completely by the wayside in the decades since, but now they're being valued and suddenly, and scholarly articles are being written about them and so on too. So that's the good news.
And in The Hearts of Horses, then, life is a little bit easier in that it's 1917. There are the beginnings of modern conveniences, cars and
telephones.
So people aren't living that day-to-day survival as much. But there is still a hardship in that, in choosing to be a woman who does something that is so traditionally male, which is breaking horses. And were there a lot of women that did that kind of work?
Well, you know, the germ for this novel came from an oral history in Teresa Jordan's book, Cowgirls, Women of the American West. She did a series of interviews with ranch women all over the Rocky Mountain West. And there's an interview in there, a woman, an older woman, who's talking about her childhood in the 1910s during World War I. And she talked about these women, these girls who break horses, as if they were pretty common. She said in those days there were girls who came through the country breaking horses. When I began to do some of the research about horse breaking in the 1910s, I found lots of evidence that girls and women were pretty commonly doing that kind of work. So it's interesting to me that very little of that has ever been written about. You don't see girls breaking horses in very many novels about the West, and certainly they weren't present at all in any of the typical Zane Grey, Ernest Haycox, Louis L'Amour kinds of novels.
And so many people, I think that book especially has so much about community, and you get to see so many different lives in this community.
The people for whom Martha is breaking horses, each of them really has their own story. And the novel ties itself together by Martha riding from one to the other in a circle, and it's a circle ride. She has a couple of horses at each of these various farms around the countryside, and she's breaking them all at the same time. So once she has them, I keep using the word breaking, even though I know that today's horse trainers would not approve of that term, but that's the term that Martha would have used, even though her methods were not bucking them out. But once she's got them saddle broke, she's got to ride them every day to get them really finished. So she starts out at one farm in the morning riding a particular horse, and she rides him the few miles to the next farm and puts him in the corral there and saddles the horse that's waiting in that corral, saddles that horse and rides him to the next farm, and so on around the circle until she winds up back at the first place at the end of the day riding a completely different horse, so that every day all the horses get ridden a little bit, and continues that day after day. It makes a very nice metaphor for the book and a nice structure for the book, and of course then also allows me to talk about the lives of all these people and on the circle. On ranches she'd worked for, it was never expected she would sleep in the bunkhouse with the men, so when she was too far from home to sleep in her own bed, she'd often been put up in the ranch house, and she'd slept in some pretty poor conditions. One time for several weeks, sharing with two children on a bed with no mattress, just a spring with gunny sacks filled with straw, and a couple of wooden fruit boxes under the spring so it wouldn't sag down to the floor. She had gotten in the habit of asking for the barn, which at least was likely to be quieter and more private. This year, before heading out on her own, she'd sewn together a sleeping bag made from a wool blanket and a piece of felt and an old fur rug. In the newspapers, she had read about the British soldiers in France who were sleeping in mud and had only a couple of thin blankets to keep them from pneumonia, so she didn't think she had any grounds for complaint. The candle cast a high shadow, but it was enough light to read by. She was making her slow way through Black Beauty, a page or two at a time, too tired most nights to read for very long. Tonight, coming to the part where Beauty meets his old friend Ginger, in terrible condition from bad treatment as a cab horse, she shut the book and blew out the candle, and then went on lying awake looking out into the darkness. Gradually the saddles and the other things took dim shape around her, and the smells of the fur rug and saddle soap, leather and hay, the warm, clean, fecund smell of horses arose out of the cold darkness and were a comfort against a yearning that was not homesickness.
Author Molly Gloss reading from The Hearts of Horses. I'm Dimae Roberts with the Special Oregon Treasures edition of Stage and Studio. I was surprised to learn that Molly Gloss became a published writer later in her life, but has accomplished 5 books, 2 of which are science fiction.
I think that's maybe one reason I like to write about the past or the future. I also write about the future. And I think that, you know, it's all a continuum. But that's one of the things that attracts me to writing about those times is, transporting to the past, a time travel thing. I've written quite a few science fiction short stories, and I have a sort of reputation in that world through those stories. And I wrote one science fiction novel, The Dazzle of Day, which is the actually won the Penn West Fiction Prize, which is rare for a science fiction novel. It's a very literary science fiction novel, I have to say. And also, I like to tell audiences who are there because of the Hearts of Horses, I like to tell them, you know, The Dazzle of Day is just like all my other books. It's about people who are farming, people who are forming community, people who are working hard and working with their hands. And it's about the same kinds of things that my other books are about.
Well, I'm buying your science fiction novel. I mean, I read a little that you wrote it, but I didn't, you know, go into it as much. So definitely, mm-hmm. I'm out there. I'll be one of the readers that reads both. I'm happy to do that. And I love that you have this whole other life as a science fiction writer, too.
What's interesting is that people who read science fiction are willing to read anything. So my science fiction fans will read all my novels. But the people who read the period novels are not so willing to read the science fiction. It's a classic problem, isn't it?
Interesting.
It's a little bit like that problem of women reading both men and women's novels and novels about men and women, whereas men mostly read only novels written by men about men. It's the same sort of
very interesting
kind of problem.
Yeah.
And I don't really see a difference there. I think that it's all a continuum, and it's just as there's just as much imagination required to imagine the past that no longer exists as there is to imagine a future that has not yet existed. The skills required for the writer are very much the same, it seems to me.
How old were you when you published your first novel?
Gosh, my first novel was actually a young adult novel called Outside the Gates, which has been out of print for 30 years, probably. Almost. It was published in 1986, so I guess I would have been in my early 40s at that point.
I think that's very inspiring for a lot of women, and your story particularly. I guess what kind of advice would you offer women who are at this point maybe middle-aged and not published, but who really want to be writers? What kind of advice do you give them?
Well, it's the same advice I would give anybody wanting to write, no matter what your age is. First, be a reader. I think all writers begin to be writers by first being readers, so you've got to be reading a lot, and you should be reading the kinds of things that you want to write, I think. If you want to be a science fiction writer, you should be reading a lot of science fiction. And other than that, you must write to please yourself. That's the first thing. And only secondarily think about whether you're writing to please others. And if you're not writing to please yourself, you're probably going to be unhappy, because getting published is a really difficult road. many people, many writers will not ever be published or not published as much as they would hope. And so you need to be doing it because you love it and not because you expect to write a bestseller and get famous.
Author Molly Gloss talking with me at her Portland home. For more info about upcoming readings or her works, go to mollygloss.com. If you missed any of the show, listen online at stageandstudio.org. I'm Dimae Roberts. This has been a special Oregon Treasures edition of Stage and Studio, featuring veteran artists, writers, and organizations in Oregon that have enriched the state. Produced with funding by the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Music featured today was Shake That Little Foot and Black Twig Pickers from the freemusicarchive.org, Cornelius Cardew from Ubu Web Sound at ubu.com, and Portland's own Foghorn String Band at foghornstringband.com. I had help from production intern Tolly Singer. I'm Dimae Roberts. Tune in next time for another edition of Stage and Studio.